From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Colonel Castle, and here's your host at Carnegie Hall in New York City, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thank you all so much. We got a great show for you this week. Writer-director Nora Ephron will be joining us later to play Not My Job. That's really exciting. Thrilled to have her. So listen, usually we spend all week reading news on the internet and then we ask questions about them on our show, but I lost my computer privileges at work. Turns out NSFW does not stand for Nifty Site for Watching. So instead of the news this week, we're going to spend this hour asking questions about the media itself, TV, blogs, social networks, and also something called magazines, which for you kids is a kind of blog that they print on paper. So the media is our message today. Give us a call, the number 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Carolyn Wilson from Arlington, Virginia.
Hey, how are things in beautiful Arlington?
They're amazing.
They're amazing?
Yes.
Thrilling?
Yes.
Great. I'm sorry, I could just go on. What do you do there?
I'm a science assistant for the National Science Foundation.
So you do science at the National Science Foundation?
Well, I help give people money so they can do science.
That's even better. That's great. Well, welcome to our show, Carolyn. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a television personality and a contributor to CBS Sunday Morning, Mr. Mo Rocca, right there.
Hi, Carolyn.
Hi, Mo.
Next up, it's a humorist and author, most recently of Hail, Hail, Euphoria, the Marx Brothers in Duck Soup, Mr. Roy Blunt, Jr.
Hey, Carolyn.
How are you doing?
Does it have to be science you give people money for?
Yes, unfortunately, yes.
And lastly, say hello to a comedian whose first CD, I Heart Jokes, is out now, Ms. Paula Poundstone.
Hey, Paula.
Hey, Carolyn. I was just performing some cash-strapped tests with gravity.
Well, Carolyn, you, of course, are going to play Who's Carl This Time. Now, it's a special edition of Who's Carl This Time. It's going to be about the very beginning of some of the internet giants that now so dominate our life and our culture. So each of Carl's quotes are going to come from the first days of what were then just internet startups, little gleams in some future mogul's eye. So you ready to play?
Yes.
All right. Here is your first quote.
Look, if this thing pans out, then great. If not, well, you can return to graduate school and finish your thesis.
So that was the advisor of a grad student named Sergey Brin back about 15 years ago. He was assuring him that if his little internet project didn't work out, things would still be cool. Well, the project worked out. What was it?
I have no idea.
Well, if you don't know, that's okay, because if you don't know, this is what you'd use to find out.
Oh, Google?
Google, yes. So grad student Sergey Brin and his friend Larry Page came up with an incredibly efficient, accurate algorithm for searching the web. And because it used what were known as backlinks, they called it Backrub. That's right. Ooh. That's what they called it. They called it Backrub. And they eventually changed the name to Google.
Yeah, lawsuit.
I know. Yes. But we really wish they hadn't changed it. Wouldn't that be cool? I mean, you're like, oh, hey, you know, what movie was that with Matt Damon and Greg Kinnear? Oh, wait, I'll Backrub it. Oh, you know, it was a decent first date, but then I back-rubbed him. Anyway, Brin and Page's grad school...
I think Google is better. It's dirtier.
You think Google is dirty?
Yeah.
How is Google dirty?
I Google myself?
I Google myself sounds dirty. Yeah.
I don't know how you were raised, but I was not allowed to say words like that in the house.
Google, of course, has been expanding its empire over recent years as Google Maps, Google News, Gmail, public restroom finder GWiz, evangelical search engine Jesus. We could go on. at its competitor, Joogle. Do you guys worry about this, though? Because we always worried about computers taking over our lives. We never imagined that we would beg them to. And we just are trusting that Google will stay benign and they won't, you know, finally decide, or it won't finally decide it's done with us. Because it'd be like, you know, well, I don't think you put cyanide in chicken tetrazzini, but I Googled the recipe and that's what it said to do.
Well, what do? If you forget the name of the search engine, what do you do?
You're stuck.
If you're trying to figure out, I need to find something, but I can't remember what the name of the search engine is.
You know, I'm not like you guys at all. I mean, maybe this goes without saying. I don't really use the computer that much. I don't find out my information there.
What do you do? Do you have books?
I do. I have some books, and there's just a lot of junk I don't know.
All right. For your next quote, we have two very brief messages.
Trying to hold my pants up while I walk home.
And the next morning,
walking to the office and still having pant problems.
Those were some messages sent by the founder of a new microblogging site just after that service was launched. What was it?
Twitter?
Yes, Twitter, of course.
Yay.
Twitter, the latest phenomenon, simultaneously lowered the standard for what's worth saying and made it incredibly easy to say. It basically turns the entire world into the guy you're trapped next to on a plane.
I Twitter, but only because I want to be in the Library of Congress.
Yeah, that's true. All the tweets are going to the Library of Congress.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, that guy's pants problem will be able to be read by people years from now.
Civilizations of the future will know in the 20th century they were ruled by a man named Justin Bieber.
Well, why did they call it Twitter? Why did they, do we know?
Because Google was taken.
Yeah.
Here we go, Carolyn. Here's your last quote.
All right. So here we are in front of the elephants, and the cool thing about these guys is that they have really, really, really long trunks. And that's cool. And that's pretty much all there is to say.
That was the entire transcript of the very first video posted on what service?
YouTube.
YouTube, yes. The very first video uploaded to YouTube was a boring short film about elephants. Now, YouTube was first conceived as a dating site, a version of hotornot.com, but in this one you could see people move on video and thus judge them by how much their chin shook. The original dating concept fell apart when, judging from the submitted videos, most of the eligible singles out there were adorable kittens.
Oh, I have some, this isn't funny, but it's interesting that every minute 10 hours of YouTube video are uploaded.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really great.
And in the space between the silence right now, there's probably hours being added. So.
Carl, how did Carolyn do in our quiz?
Well, Carolyn, you had 3 correct answers. That's a correct score and a complete score, and that means you win our prize.
Well done, Carolyn. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. This is awesome.
Well done, Carolyn, and thanks for playing.
Thank you.
Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions. Of course, the questions are all about this week's theme, the media. Paula, a hit reality game show in Turkey gives contestants points for getting somebody to do what?
For getting people to, I don't know. Can you give me a hint?
Sure. It's like a TV version of having a Jehovah's Witness knock on your door.
For converting people?
Yes, exactly right.
Oh,
it's like
my
an old joke.
Heaven.
Like, so on this Turkish game show, penitents compete. A priest, a rabbi, an imam, and a Buddhist monk
walk into a bar,
walk onto a TV set, and try to convert 10 atheists to their particular faith. This is true. Each of the religious leaders gets a point if they get a convert. And what happens is if they do this, if they convince the whoever it is to try their religion, the person they've convinced gets a trip slash pilgrimage to their holy site. So, for example, if you go with the Muslims, you get to go to Mecca. Buddhists go to Tibet. Jews go to Boca Raton. You know, it's supposed to be peaceful. It's going to get competitive, though. You know, the Buddhist will say, well, only we believe in reincarnation. The priest says, sure, but if you come back as a pig, only we get to eat you.
Wow. You know, I like knowing that, though, because sometimes I think we're the only stupid country. And then you hear a thing like that, and you're just like, you know what? We're not alone. That's the important thing.
Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Meg from Santa Cruz.
Oh, Santa Cruz, California?
That's right.
That's a great place. What do you do there?
I am a graduate student at the UC.
The UC Santa Cruz, which is a fabulous campus, lurking there in the Redwoods.
It's beautiful.
It's so beautiful. How do you ever convince yourself to go inside and study?
Well, as a graduate student, I don't think I have a choice.
Really? What do they do to you if you don't?
They might kick me out.
Oh, that would be bad. Then you'd just be in the trees all day.
Good point. Which is what some students do.
Yeah. Well, welcome to the show, Meg. You're going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Meg's topic?
Bam! Pow! Flack!
That was vivid.
Thank you.
That was good. Superheroes live admirable lives, righting wrongs, saving distressed damsels. But that's on screen. In the real world, they can be subject to the same slings and arrows as the rest of us. Each of our panelists are going to tell you three stories of superheroes facing enemies in real life, only one of which is true. Pick the real one, and you win our prize, Carl's message, and your home answering machine. Ready to play?
Yeah.
All right. First, let's hear from Paula Poundstone.
Spider-Man may not be the heroic arachnid we once believed. On a recent night at Tost, the cutting-edge restaurant where salad is art, Tobey Maguire was spotted amidst New York City's finest diners. Just as he was enjoying nature's bounty, a spider crawled out from the shadowy shelter of his wicker bread basket. Angus Eddie Byrne was at the next table. "The guy flipped out," says Eddie Byrne. He was up on his chair screaming. I don't want to say like a girl because my wife will hit me, but it was a high, keening noise. Certainly like a female bird anyway, or a chimp, maybe a female chimp, like when they're scared, like when they feel threatened. When the waiter tried to calm him down, he kept shouting, "I was bitten by a spider once." And the waiter said, "What are you talking about? You played Spider-Man. That was a movie. What's the matter with you? You're paying for this meal, buddy." I think he thought the guy was trying to get out of pain, but I'm telling you, the guy was really scared. He was flapping his napkin and pointing at it with his breadstick. He wouldn't even give me an autograph. Mr. Maguire could not be reached for comment.
Tobey Maguire, Spider-Man in the movies, scared by a spider. Your next story of a superhero not doing so super comes from Roy Belanta Jr.
When the NYU research biologist Rezar Lopet was a boy in Sri Lanka, he loved Mighty Mouse cartoons. It's no coincidence that Lopet has now genetically engineered a hardier lab rat named Mighty Mouse. He can't fly, punch out cats, or sing "Here I Come to Save the Day," but Lopet's Mighty Mouse is much bigger and more muscular than ordinary white mice, has already exceeded their life expectancy, and is still going strong. The problem is, he comes on too strong. "He means well," Lopet told USA Today this week, "but he's like Lenny in Of Mice and Men, doesn't know his own strength." And I might say that he is extremely, even for his size, well endowed. On TV, Mighty Mouse kept saving his steady girlfriend, Pearl Pureheart. "My Mighty Mouse makes female mice run for their lives." "I could clone him, of course, but I keep hoping he'll reproduce naturally." He clearly hopes so, too, but he sort of pounces. It's sad.
I An attempt to create Mighty Mouse ends up with a rodent that doesn't know its own strength. And your last story, a superpower is not helping, comes from Mo Rocca.
Batman could vanquish the Joker, the Riddler, even Poison Ivy, but he may have met his match in the villain known as Frivolous Lawsuit. Dark Knight producers and director Christopher Nolan are being sued by the mayor of the village of Batman, Turkey, seeking royalties from the 2008 blockbuster. Quote, "There is only one Batman in the world," says Batman Mayor Kalkan, whose name sounds more like a Star Trek villain. It may all sound like a load of Istanbul, but holy Bataturk, this guy is not backing down. He blames the wrongful use of the name Batman for distress and a spike of violence. Presumably, Batman could have prevented this had he been in Turkey and not on a press tour.
All right. Here, then, are your choices. From Paula Poundstone, Spider-Man star Tobey Maguire being freaked out by a real spider. From Roy Blunt Jr., an attempt to create a Mighty Mouse in the lab goes somewhat awry. Or from Mo Rocca, the town of Batman, Turkey, claiming that they, not the Caped Crusader, are the only real Batman and they deserve damages. Which of these is the real story about a superhero in extremis?
Well, I'm pretty afraid of spiders, so I'm going to go with Tobey Maguire being afraid of spiders.
You're going to choose Tobey Maguire, star of Spider-Man, freaking out because of a spider in a restaurant.
Yes.
All right, that's your choice. Well, we actually spoke to a reporter who covered this surprising story.
The mayor of Batman said that he was going to sue Warner Brothers and Christopher Nolan because they had used the Batman name without permission.
That was Dave McNary. He's a writer for Variety. He covered the Batman lawsuit filed by the mayor of Batman, Turkey. I'm sorry, but obviously, Mo, believe it or not, for once had the right answer. So you didn't win.
I just think it's bat-bleep crazy.
It is. Anyway, you did not win our prize, but you earned a point for Paula for her, I agree with you, strangely credible story of Tobey Maguire being actually scared of spiders. Thanks so much for playing, Meg.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And now the game where we reward big success by asking people to do something tiny, namely our game, Not My Job. Nora Ephron is an essayist, novelist, and an Oscar-nominated writer and director of the kind of romantic comedies you don't have to be ashamed you love. Her films include When Harry Met Sally, Silkwood, Sleepless in Seattle. She's got a new book, I Remember Nothing. Nora Ephron, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you.
What a pleasure to have you. I want to ask you this, because you've made some of the most successful romantic comedies of all time, certainly the last 20 years, where everybody's charming and funny and self-aware, and it all ends up great in the end. Are you trying to ruin it for everybody?
Isn't your life like that?
Not yet.
No? Are you married or divorced?
I am, in fact, married.
You are?
Yes.
Well, what are you complaining about?
You have written about your own, quite vividly, about your own marital and romantic life. You've been married 3 times, right?
Yes, I have.
You wrote the novel Heartburn about your marriage in the 70s. That became a movie in which you were played by Meryl Streep, which is an impressive thing to have happen
to
you.
Yes, and it was also about my divorce.
It was.
Yes.
So let's go back to that time in your life, and you're like, here, I just met Nora Ephron, I'm attracted to her. But if I marry her, I might end up in a major movie someday being played as a complete jerk by Jack Nicholson.
Yeah.
Is that the sort of thing that caused you some difficulty?
Well, my next husband, and I hope my last husband, is sort of connected to the mob. I don't make that mistake.
So,
with him.
So while you could have him played by Jack Nicholson in an unattractive fashion, he could have you buried in a cornfield.
That's right.
There you are. Yeah. So it's like a...
It's a fair deal.
It's an
deal.
Arms
yeah.
race.
Yeah,
it's an
right.
arms race.
Yeah.
You've written... I mean, to me, you're as emblematic a New Yorker as Woody Allen.
You've
said, for example, you've made movies about New York, you've written about New York. One of the stories you've told is that when you were a kid, you were born here, but when you were like 4... your parents moved you to Beverly Hills?
Yes.
And this is the cool thing. You say that you hated it immediately.
I did. I was at nursery school, and the sun was shining, and happy, laughing children were everywhere. And all I could think was, what have they done to me? Where am I?
What was it about? I mean, what was it about?
Sunshine, laughter. I don't know.
It doesn't sit well with a New Yorker soul.
I just knew I didn't belong there. You know, fish out of water thing. Yeah. You know.
She was the only 4-year-old wearing all black.
Yeah. What is amazing about you is we were researching you, and we knew about the movies, and we've read the books, but the people you've known in your life, you're like Zelig. You were everywhere. For example, one of your first gigs was you were an intern at JFK's White House.
I was.
Wow.
I was. In fact, I think I was the only person that Kennedy met that he didn't make a pass at.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah. Have you come to peace with that?
Well, that's only because he didn't want to be played by Jack Nicholson.
Exactly. He knew. And then, of course, you were married to Carl Bernstein in the middle of Watergate.
Mm-hmm.
So you went from JFK to Watergate. Did you canoodle with Lyndon Baines Johnson along the way? Any connection to that administration?
No, I didn't. But, you know, I've written about this in my book because I was at all these places, and I don't remember them. I met Eleanor Roosevelt. Ask me what she was like.
What was Eleanor Roosevelt like?
I have no idea.
How did you meet Eleanor Roosevelt?
I went up to visit with her because I was going to be an intern in the White House, and we all went marching up there, all of us interns. And all I remember is that I got lost on the Taconic.
do you remember?
This is what happens to you, you know? I mean, I was there the night Nixon resigned.
You were where?
In front of the White House. Oh, and do you know what happened?
What happened?
My wallet was stolen.
Mm. And that's all you remember?
Yeah.
Mm. How do you have any explanation for why it was that you are like the person who was around all these famous people, who've met all these famous people? And
well, no, I do think that when you're a journalist, you sometimes discover that you're at places, you know, where things like that happen. You get sent to them. The Beatles, I was there.
You were where?
I was there the day they arrived in America.
Really?
You were there?
Well, where?
I was at Kennedy Airport. I went to the Ed Sullivan show.
Wow.
I did all that stuff.
Right.
But I couldn't hear them.
No.
No.
Right.
No.
Were you on the moon when they landed?
No.
One last question. So you have done all these romantic comedies, and despite what the first draft of Harry Met Sally might have been, they almost always end with happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And so tell us now, Nora Ephron, writer-director of all those great movies, thrice and now successfully married, what is the secret to being happily in love? Go, tell us.
Oh, probably separate bathrooms.
Well, Nora Ephron, we are delighted to have you here. We've asked you here today to play a game we're calling...
I don't go anywhere without my Charles Bronson Bunsen burner.
Ooh. When you're a celebrity, as I'm sure you know, nothing is more valuable than your name, so the more worthless crap you can slap your name on, the more money you make. We're going to ask you 3 questions about questionable celebrity endorsements. Get 2 right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl Castle's name, on their home answering machine, or a Carl Castle brand home answering machine. So, Carl, who is Nora Ephron playing for?
Nora is playing for Sanjay Mukherjee of Montclair, New Jersey.
There you go.
And
New Jersey.
I want to apologize to Sanjay in advance.
That's probably wise.
Yes.
And charming, may I say. Yes. All right. Here's your first question, Nora. The name Sylvester Stallone says strength, toughness, slurred speech. Which one of these products did the Italian stallion put his name on? Was it A, Sylvester Stallone's power hammock, B, Sylvester Stallone high protein pudding, or C, Sly's thigh master?
Whoa.
Yes.
A pudding. If it had been a pudding, I like to think I would have tried it.
So, well, you
so
like
I'm
the pudding,
I'm
going
to rule out the pudding.
You're ruling out the pudding?
Yeah. Why? Do you think that's a bad idea?
Maybe this pudding didn't come your way. Maybe they don't have this pudding at Zabar's. You didn't see it. That's what I'm saying.
I don't know. I just can't believe pudding and Sly in the same thing. So I have to go for the thighs.
You're going to go for Sly's thigh master?
But Oh,
okay. Yes, what?
I don't want to...
You remember the pudding?
No, it's not that. Yeah. No, I remember the Jello. No, it's just that I wouldn't that be... Oh, gosh, would be a first if I misled a guest. But
yeah.
It just seems to... I'm not a lawyer, but it seems like that would be a copyright infringement because Suzanne Somers has the Thigh Master.
Oh.
The hammock, I can see it. Wasn't there a shot in Rambo in the jungle? I don't know. It just seems like a nice place for a hammock.
Okay,
but I'm not telling
really
you to do
not
that.
Like him.
We don't know.
I'll go with Mo.
You're going to go with Mo, and what's Mo?
Sure, hammock.
It was the pudding. That's okay. The answer is the pudding.
Okay.
It's high protein.
Yeah.
It's no. You cannot. And for those of you who are like searching the internet right now to buy Sly Stallone high protein pudding, it's no longer available, sadly. All right, you still have two chances, though. You can still win this. The band Kiss has put their name on dolls, T-shirts, you name it, but one of the more expensive Kiss-branded items was what? A, the $4,700 Kiss casket. So even in death, people would know how crappy your taste in music was. B, the $6,000 Kiss kisser, a full set of dentures available with or without fangs.
Yeah.
Or C, a $600 Kiss kitten, which is, quote, specially bred for ferociousness by Gene Simmons himself.
I met him.
You met whom?
Gene.
Gene Simmons.
I did. Yeah.
Yeah, I have to ask, in what context?
We had lunch at the Russian Tea Room.
You remember?
And
I remember this, but that's
you
it.
Can't remember Eleanor
that's
Roosevelt, all, but Gene Simmons.
And I had borscht. I'm just treading water here.
I understand you're
treading
water.
Because I have no idea.
Really?
Yeah.
You don't have any idea. So we'll go over. It's the Kiss casket.
Yeah.
It's the Kiss emblazoned casket with Kiss.
Yeah.
They like that.
Right. Yeah.
Kiss fans.
Yeah.
Kiss fans. Kiss kisser dentures, custom-made for those Kiss fans who find themselves toothless, or the Kiss kitten, specially bred by Gene Simmons' cat fancier.
So I'm going to guess the casket.
You're going to guess the casket, and you are right! Well
thank
done.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I had some help on
yeah,
that.
It's emblazoned with a giant Kiss logo. It can be used as a beer cooler until you die. It's true. Here's your last question. It all comes down to this. One of Paris Hilton's many contributions to the world is what? A, the Paris Hilton trampoline, bouncing is hot. B, the Paris Hilton branded Snuggie, warmth is hot. Mm. Or C, the Paris Hilton scrapbooking kit, being creative is hot.
I'm going to say
scrapbookers in the audience.
Scrapbooking kit.
And you will be right. It is, in fact, the scrapbooking kit. Very good. The scrapbooking kit. It's reportedly one of her passions. Another one? One of her many passions. We'll just leave it there.
Yeah.
Carl, how did Nora Ephron do in our quiz?
Well, she had two correct answers, Peter. So, Nora, you win for Sanjay
well
Mukherjee.
Well done.
I'm so happy. Thank you.
Wow.
Thank you.
Very nice.
Nora Ephron is a writer, director, the author of the new book, I Remember Nothing. It's out now. Nora Ephron, thank you so much.
It had to be you. It had to be you. I wandered around and finally found the somebody who could make me be true.
In just a minute. Carl opens his off-Broadway one-man show, A Chorus Rhyme, in our Listener Limerick Challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call. The number, of course, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you. All again, on the theme this week, it's media. Mo, bad news for beloved American Idol and Britain's Got Talent judge Simon Cowell. He is being sued by a contestant who's making a startling claim that Mr. Cowell did what?
He's making a claim that Simon Cowell wasn't harsh enough, wasn't...
quite the opposite.
It was too harsh.
Exactly.
What do you mean?
He's suing her because he insulted her singing.
She's suing him, right.
She's suing him, yes. Okay. For anyone that hasn't seen American Idol, this is like suing the Mets for losing. Last May...
Boy, once again, Peter, you can work a room.
Last May, Emma Chikai appeared on Britain's Got Talent, and Cowell told her she had a terrible voice, quote unquote. So she naturally sued him for $3.8 million. She accused him of, quote, exploitation, humiliation, degradation, and barbarism, which coincidentally are the names of Simon's children. She then sued the sun for rising in the east, the pope for being Catholic, and a bear for unsanitary practice in the forest. Paolo, one of the world's great media moguls, is now Prime Minister of Italy. That's Silvio Berlusconi. He owns television stations, newspapers, publishing houses, film companies.
Yeah.
What set him on his path to fortune and power?
Oh.
What was his first job?
Well, I happen to not know this. What was his first job? Well, I'm just going to reach back into my own life, assuming that we're very similar. Feeding neighbors pets.
No.
I was so close, though. Is that correct?
No. I'll give you a hint, though.
Hostess at the IHOP. Is that?
It is international.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that is. International House of Pancakes.
Bicycle messenger. So far, I am at the exact
same. You know
what
you sound like?
This guy.
You sound like my high school guidance counselor. That's the last time I had this conversation. It's like, ladies and gents, the plutocrat will be singing down in the Lido deck.
He was on a cruise ship?
He was.
He worked on a cruise ship?
He did. He sang on a cruise ship.
Whoa.
This is true. As a young man in the 1960s, Silvio Berlusconi spent his summers doing a lounge act on Italian ships cruising around the Mediterranean.
The Amor Boat.
Yeah. He was, it's true. He was reportedly partial to Sinatra, the classic Italian balladeers of the era, and sexually harassing female passengers. Turns out he's not the only world leader to get a start on a cruise ship. Vladimir Putin worked on a Russian icebreaker tied to the prow so he could smash the ice with his fists. Britain's Tony Blair was a steersman on a ship, but he was fired when he just fined a big American ship and follow it around. And Nicolas Sarkozy's first job, sitting on a pirate's shoulder.
Boy,
they're French.
This is a whole room full of Sarkozy supporters. Not to be toyed with. Either that or parrot fans.
Mo, there are magazines for every interest. Runner's World for runners, 17 for girls who can't wait to grow up, Maxim for guys who are too scared to talk to actual women. Well, now, there's a new publication specifically for whom?
Future world leaders working on cruise ships. I don't. Can you get?
I give you a hand. Yeah, yeah, instead of looking down their noses at the rest of us, these people can now look down and read a magazine.
I'm thinking like the Windsors, like royal family. It could be looking down their noses. Oh, for elephants.
No.
Oh, that's a trunk. That's not a nose. No. It could be. It could be for.
Does anybody know?
Oh, no.
Is it for snobs?
No. It is for snobs.
Well, wait a minute, but I said, I'd like to.
I say snob, I think the magazine.
We said elephants.
All right. So she's looking down her nose at
apparently.
Me.
Apparently. No, the magazine is, in fact, called Snob. So the answer
wow.
is snob. Concerned your copy of Town and Country of the New Yorker isn't giving a strong enough status signal to the other people on the subway? Then hold up a copy of Snob in front of your face. This is a Russian language publication. It debuted in New York in September of 2010 and is targeted at, they say, people who are snobs or people who hope to be snobs. That is, they hope the person they will be someday will have nothing to do with the person they are now.
I think even better than that would be a magazine called Snub, where you open it up and it just turns around on you, just turns it back.
My daughter is 16.
Yes.
And she used to receive 17 magazine, and now she says you don't receive it when you're 16. She goes, it's for 12-year-olds. Mm. And I said, but it says 17 right on the cover. I said, and she said, no, but you. I go, well, that's just plain weird. Like, you know, I mean, I'm 50. I'm not gonna. I would never buy 60 magazine.
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, I'm Frank Elliott from Richland, Washington.
Now, where's Richland?
It's sort of southeastern Washington, the part of the state that's not green.
Not green. What color is it?
Sort of tan.
It's a tan.
Yeah, we have tumbleweeds.
You have tumbleweeds?
I love tumbleweeds.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Do they actually tumble like they do in the movies?
Oh, yeah, yeah. People hit them with their cars and drag them underneath it, and they can catch fire, and yeah, they're dangerous.
Sounds like fun. Frank, welcome to the show. Carl Castle will now read you three limericks with a last word or phrase missing from each. They all have to do this time with the science of media, studies about media, media studies. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly on two of the limericks, you'll be a winner. Ready to go?
Yes.
Here is your first limerick.
When I'm in our bed here with Deb, and our passion is starting to ebb, I'll turn on my browser to get back that wowza. I'll simply start surfing the
web.
Yes. A survey from the firm PC Tools found that near a quarter of Americans maintain connectivity to the internet during sex.
Ooh.
They do that. We have to accept our partners will be distracted in this day and age, so we put up with it, I guess. It does hurt when they start creating a profile in eHarmony right in the middle, though. That's. Here is your next limerick.
When guitarists are starting to shred, I should be confined to my bed. But for heavy metal, I'd be in fine fettle. It's bad to be banging my
head.
Yes, it's our first music story today. Turns out it's not death metal, it's repetitive stress injury metal. Scientists have calculated this, the precise neck angle and rhythm most harmful for headbangers. 75 degrees at more than 130 beats per minute. That's the threshold. Their advice, this is a quote from the study. Headbangers should decrease their range of head and neck motion. Headbang to slower tempo songs, only headbang to every second beat or use personal protective equipment, unquote. So have fun at the AC/DC concert, honey, and don't forget your music helmet. Here is your last limerick.
The police should have got all the grime clean. There's no prints to be found when it's slime green. We jurors all know from our TV shows just what can be found at a
scene?
Yes, what kind of scene?
A crime scene.
Crime scene, yes, there you go.
Oh, okay.
Prosecutors across the country are complaining that thanks to TV dramas like CSI, suddenly every juror who can work a remote is an expert in forensic science. Sure, you've got fingerprints off of that cigarette, but did you test the saliva residue for DNA? Experts say the trend is only going to get worse. In a recent poll, jurors also complained that the trial lasted more than an hour and that they were unable to switch to the game during the boring parts. Carl, how did Frank do in our quiz?
Well, Frank was perfect. Peter, three correct answers. Frank, you win our prize.
Well done. Congratulations.
Ah. Thank you.
Thank you so much for playing, Frank.
Thank you.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill-in-the-Blank. Each of the players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
Paula Poundstone has the lead. Peter, she has 4 points. Mo Rocca has 3. Roy Blunt Jr. has 1.
All right. Roy, you are in third place. You're up first. All your questions will be about new media. New media. Here we
right.
go. Clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill-in-the-blank. Hoping new technology will save them, newspapers and magazines heralded the release of Apple's blank in 2010.
Tablet.
Yeah, the iPad. To cash in on the success of movies like Avatar, Panasonic became the first manufacturer to offer blank TVs.
3D.
Right. A recent promotion by Goodyear Tires Dunlop unit offered free tires to customers willing to have advertisements blanked on themselves.
Tattooed.
Yes, fed up with trying to fill a 24-hour news cycle, or Norwegian radio journalist quit her job on air in 2010 saying blank.
That's all she wrote. That's
no,
all
she said, news. Quote, nothing important has happened.
Ah.
Following in the footsteps.
Realistic.
Following in the footsteps of Coco Chanel and Elizabeth Arden, Britain's Sun became the first newspaper to launch a signature blank.
Fragrance.
Right. Perfume called Buzz. In 2015, the United Kingdom will become the first nation to completely switch from analog radio to blank.
To digital.
Yes. To spice up their 2008 Sexiest Man Alive issue, People magazine made its profiles of celebrities like Michael Phelps blank.
made them things where you could, those things where you could pull off layers and get more.
No. They were scratch and sniff frogs.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. The so-called sexy scent section featured TV and movie stars in addition to Michael Phelps. Now, it's not the distinct smell of the athlete, which is what we had hoped. The celebrities chose their favorite scent. Film actor Taye Diggs Page smelled of vanilla, chocolate, and sandalwood. Gossip Girl's Chase Crawford chose freshly cut grass. Phelps also chose grass. Carl, how did Roy do in our quiz?
Roy had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He now has 11 points, and Roy has the lead.
All right. Mo, you're up next. All of your questions are about censorship. Please fill in the blank. Janet Jackson's accidental exposure at the Super Bowl halftime show was famously referred to as a blank.
A nip slip.
Well, I was going to say wardrobe malfunction, but I would give that to you,
Carl.
Sorry. All right, that's fine. How can I say no? Among the many women barred from showing her belly button on TV was Marianne from blank.
Gilligan's Island.
Right. Because he wasn't allowed to use the phrase water closet in a joke in 1960, Tonight Show host blank walked off the set.
Oh, Jack Parr.
Yes. An Iowa theater uncomfortable with a movie titled Jackass 2 on their marquee called it blank instead.
Shenanigans.
No, they called it Jack Butt 2.
Oh, jeez.
Because the Twitter feed it was based on used a profanity, CBS chose to name their new William Shatner sitcom blank.
Bleep my dad says.
Right. I've had it with these Monday to Friday snakes on this monkey fighting plane. Was the TV edit of the famous line from the movie blank.
I've had it with these snakes on a plane.
Snakes on a plane, right. In 1942, censors took action against the character blank for showing too much flesh.
Betty Boop.
No. Tweety Bird.
Wow.
Really?
Before the fluffy yellow Tweety we know today, there was the dirty, featherless, pink-skinned Tweety of 1943. Mm. And censors caught a glimpse of the naked bird in the cartoon of Tale of Two Kitties. They objected. Tweety said he did not object to doing nudity in the future, quote, as long as it's tasteful. Mm. Carl, how did Mo do in our quiz?
Mo had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He now has 13 points, and Mo has taken the lead.
That's great.
There you are. All right, how many then does Paula need to win?
5 correct answers.
She can do this.
Man.
She can do this. You know why you can do this? Because I happen to know, Paula, that one of your enthusiasms is television, and all of your questions, by random chance this time, happen to be about television theme songs. Here we go. This is for the game.
Whoa.
Black Gold, Texas Tea, and Bubbling Crude were other terms for oil used in the theme song for blank.
Beverly Hillbillies.
Right. A UK poll said the most memorable TV theme of all time was that of the prehistoric cartoon blank.
50th anniversary of the Flintstones.
Right. In every episode of his show, Mr. Rogers changed into a cardigan and sneakers and asked viewers, won't you be my blank?
Won't you be my neighbor?
Right. The composer of the Addams Family theme instructed the actors to blank in a very bored way.
Snap their fingers.
Right. Beyond the rim of the starlight, my love is wandering in starflight, is the little-known first verse of the lyrics to the blank theme song.
Oh, I Love Lucy.
Star Trek. Star Trek, the Star Trek theme in the original series had lyrics. Gene Roddenberry's lyrics, he wrote them, they were never used, but the fact that they existed entitled him to half the music's royalties.
What was the point
of contention that caused the composer to leave the series, and now if I may, the genius of Gene Roddenberry, I did not rehearse this. Here we go, I'm going to try to do this. Beyond the rim of the starlight, my love is wandering in starflight.
Peter, did you ever hear something called practice, practice,
yeah,
practice?
I heard that. Carl, did Paula do well enough to win?
Paula needed 5 to win, but Paula had just 4 correct answers. So with 13 points, Mo Rocca is this week's champion.
Well done.
Just didn't have the goods.
Congratulations. In just a minute, we'll ask our panelists, now that we've gone from radio to TV to internet, how next will we consume media? But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Progressive Insurance with Snapshot, which monitors mileage and safe driving habits to determine a personalized rate. Learn more at progressive.com. The National Association of Realtors, an advocate for home ownership. More at houselogic.com/homeownership. And Lumber Liquidators with hardwood, bamboo, and cork flooring, a floor finder app and information online. Lumberliquidators.com. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, Chief Productivity Obstacle. Special thanks to Rachel Davis and the crew at Carnegie Hall and to Brent Bachman at NPR. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Shellog, Eva Waltrover, and Emily Ecton, with special help this week from Tricia McKinney. Technical direction from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mr. Michael Danforth. Now, panel, what will be the next new way we consume media? Paula Poundstone.
It'll just be a metal chip in your head, and you don't even turn it on. It just keeps going.
Mo Rocca.
Teletubby-like devices in our stomachs. And with expanding waistlines, we'll all have giant flat screens pretty soon.
And Roy Blunt, Jr.
To sort of combat elitism in the media, the talking heads will come to your house as holograms and sit around your table with you and your friends, and they will say something, and you will lean over toward them and say, "You are so full of it."
Well, if any of that happens, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Mo Rocca, Paula Poundstone, and Roy Blunt, Jr. Thanks also to Chris Bannon, Abby Levenger, and everyone at WNYC. Thanks to our fabulous audience here at Carnegie Hall, the Perelman Stage, New York City. And thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. This is NPR.